This is April 27th, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning.
We were wondering if we could begin with a discussion of the mother, or mother energy.
The reason that I've asked this question be raised is twofold. One, I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding of mother energy. What it is and what it is not. And second, because I think that there are some using these tapes who would be able to make maximum use of the understanding of mother energy. Let me be very clear at the outset. This tape is not for everyone. It is extremely difficult to try to bridge the different needs of the varying people. And so I would say to you, if you feel an appeal toward the understanding and feel a participating energy flow with what is being said on this tape, then perhaps you should give consideration to following some of the suggestions that I hope to put forth as far as using the mother energy is concerned. If, on the other hand, this is not your response, if there is no movement within your being, then please simply realize it is not for you. The misunderstanding that has come about mother energy is this. There are many who are saying that this is the age of the mother. And while that is true, it is also not true. And the way that it is not true is that it supposes something that I would like to point out to be false. It supposes that this energy, which is called the mother energy, the female principle, has not been manifest in dynamic quantities on the earth plane in previous times, and that this is a new movement, a brand new movement upon the earth plane. This is totally and utterly erroneous. It is true to state that there are various people on the earth plane who in the Western world, and I must put this clearly, who in the Western world are now attuning themselves to the female energy. The female, the mother figure, the divine mother, has been one of the primary impetus in the Hindu religion since its beginning times. And it stands now as one of the strongest parts of that basic faith. Therefore, when a Westerner speaks of it being a new energy, then let us be clear. It is new for the Westerner who is masculinely oriented. Yes, I will agree to this. And it is true that the Western world has taken the will of the masculine aspect and used it as a bludgeoning tool through much of the earth plane progress of the Western world. Let me be more specific. At its maximum, masculine energy is not the force, the power, the manipulation, the destruction that the Western world has made it into. Do you understand? There is a way to be a masculine principle participant and to be totally one with compassion and love and care and protection and support. Do you see? But the masculine principle in the beings of those who are not evolved, if I might use that terrible phrase, who are not evolved enough to really understand it, is greatly misused. And then it becomes what you see. It becomes that vehicle for wars, that vehicle for mass industry, the use of humans to the end for the financial benefit, all of the horrors of the world as you perceive it now. Much of it is the misuse of what I would call the masculine principle. But at its highest, the masculine principle stands for this. First and foremost, inner clarity. First and foremost, inner clarity. And then, an extension through action into the earth plane, in whatever way is harmonious with that moment. An extension out. The first of those two points is the one that has never been deeply considered. There is no question there is such a thing as masculine energy. Absolutely. Women have it, men have it. It is not that men have it and women do not. I think this is tremendously erroneous, and I would like to quickly dispel all thoughts of that. If you are in a male body, it does not mean that you embody a great deal of masculine energy. In fact, many male bodies take on male form in order to develop the masculine energy because it has been weak in them, and they decide to take on the masculine form in order to bring action forward. All women in female forms are not endowed with feminine energy. Many women are endowed with masculine energy. So let us drop the idea that you are your body. We will just simply say there are different vortexes of energy at work, and you will manifest to whatever degree is necessary, one or the other of these two aspects. All right, so let us return to the female principle. At its height, the female principle stands for complete, total, and utter surrender. Receptivity to whatever the divine masculine principle wishes. All right? Seen in the cosmic sense, this would be the earth, and the primary masculine energy being the divine will. Earth is feminine. If you look at what happens on the earth plane in its natural, harmonious way, and not the contrived world of mind, you will see a naturalness. It accepts, it takes in, and then it flowers in whatever is planted within it. And its own planting, it doesn't seek out to say, I will take this and I refuse that. I will accept this seed and I will reject that. I do not like acorns, I only like squash. Or I don't like nuts, I only like fruit. What does the earth do? Whatever is placed in it, whatever the divine will, if you would call it this, places within it, it will take care of, it will nurture, it will bring forward something and do its utmost under very dire, dire circumstances to bring forth life. Look at what happens on the crags of the topmost mountains of the earth. Even there, when you expect nothing, you will see what this female principle is capable of. Conditions that would defy the ability to bring life out of a seed that has been dropped by a passing bird. And it does so. Somehow it finds within itself the desire to grow, to nurture, to bring forward, to bring to life this gift that has been given to it. That is its highest principle. And the woman who comes to develop her female aspect would be wise to listen carefully. And the male who senses a dryness within his heart would do well to listen well. Because this is what I would like to give you as a mental image. The energy of the receptive, which is the female principle, is within each of you. It lies there within the area that you choose to call the heart center. It lies in its quietness, just as the seed lies upon the rock of the mighty mountains, awaiting life. And then what is it then that brings this growth within you? What is it then that is needful? I know I repeat myself, but I shall do so now until the last day that I speak with you. I must go back to our basic principle. The thing that stirs that into life is your awareness of it, is the attention that you place upon it. The female principle will spring to life in its dynamic, nurturing, loving, compassionate form in anyone who chooses to dwell within the heart and to listen. The female principle is alive in every aspect of the createdness. If you wish to see the female principle anywhere manifest, it is on this earth plane that you can see it best, with the eyes. If you will look, that is the principle that you see most obvious. In fact, if I might be brutal, it is that upon which you depend. Without the female principle to nurture, to take in and transform the seed into a plant, what would you eat? If that principle were not active in the animal kingdom, to take the seed and to activate it into a transforming life and then let it go into the earth plane to serve you in your needs, how would you live? What would the earth do if this principle were lacking? And yet, a sad, sad state that I see prevalent in the females who have come into incarnation at this time is the turning away from this process. And equally side by side, the sorrow of seeing the masculine principle no longer bestowing the reverence and the gratitude upon that principle as it might manifest in the female aspect. I think it is a sorrow of the Western world that this duality, which is so totally harmonious, has become a battleground. It is a battleground within each woman, and it is a battleground within each man. To the men listening, I would ask this. A serious consideration of how they feel about that feminine principle. Because I think many men, if they will look carefully, at the bottom of it, they have two feelings. One is love, or whatever you would choose to call it, and one is fear. There is tremendous fear in the male mind to honor the feminine aspect. And why? Because you fear that you will be swallowed up by it. You understand deeply within your being that all of you depend on it. Look around you, my friends. Look around you. You know well within your being that you depend upon that principle to give you your very life. But you cannot honor it, because if you begin to honor it, you are afraid. You have this fear that you will fall overboard and be immersed, and then the female principle will jump upon you and rend the blood and the life out of you and leave you a hollow husk. I would say that that is possible with some women. There is no question about that. Just as it is possible for some men to have absolutely no concern or consideration for the feminine aspect. Yes. But if you are afraid of such things, then liberation is not for you. Try something else. Try something else. Because until the men have looked deeply within their being and come to grips with this duality, this fear, and seen it for what it is, they will never be able to be free of it, because it is one of those periphery problems. Do you understand? It's one of those problems that hover on the periphery of man, this fear of what woman will do. And therefore, my friends, you cannot love, because you cannot love what you fear. Believe me, you cannot love that which you fear. And if you feared that you will be destroyed, you cannot surrender to it. All right, that's the male side, but let's say the female side. There is fear there. Why? Because the feminine aspect understands its power. There is a part within each woman that understands exactly as the male understands, that that power lies within them. They feel it. They know it. When do women feel the best, generally? When things are beginning to move within the earth. When does a woman look her most beautiful? When she is carrying child. What is this? What is this knowing that permeates? It's because she knows the power, and she fears this power, And why does she fear it? Because she knows that should she move into her stride and begin to pour out that feminine energy, that she will be able, in the last, to turn the balance and to perhaps destroy the male. This is not her deepest desire. And so it is a difficult job that you have set out for yourselves. And yet, in my understanding, it is the only reason that marriage should exist on the earth plane. Without this basic need to understand these two energies, I do not see the need for the state of matrimony or the state of being with one partner, if we would put it that way. The actual state of matrimony, according to laws and so forth, is of no interest to me. I'm simply meaning the coming together and the staying together through the difficulties and through the mountains and the valleys and so forth. Now, why is it necessary to have an enduring relationship in order to have this become a balanced part of your being? Again, I must say, this is not everyone's way. Those of you who have no one in your life, who do not feel drawn to this, this is not something for you to be interested in. I'm only speaking to those of you who are involved in relationships that have this possibility of fruition. There is no one answer for anyone. Please be very well aware of that. What then is required? We spoke last time about the friend who can stand amid the wash of the other's emotions and stand so firm, so grounded, that they allow the other the play of the emotional field, understanding that it must have its time of birth, of difficulty, of chaos, and then after that it will come into a free-flowing energy pattern. And so it is with the male and the female. If the woman could understand deeply that much of the resistance of the male to deep communion, I'm speaking of deep communion now, is fear, then she will be able then to go within her own being, if she is an attuned person, and see that these are compatible fears. The fear is the same in each. And with this knowledge that the fear remains within, it will begin to loosen itself up. The man will begin to understand himself better and be able to see why he has put up these walls of resistance. And the woman will be able to understand herself better and realize why she is feared to put out her energy. Why does a woman wait for a man to give the first indications of caring? Why is it that the man is the one who decides whether there should be a question asked of matrimony? Or why is the man, if we would, the aggressor sexually? Why is this so? It is because the female's role must be to wait quietly, receptively, and observe. Is this divine movement going to come and become one with me, and shall we then move into harmony and have some kind of a deep relationship? Or is it not? If the woman takes the aggressive angle of things and moves into that relationship with the power, the male would fall away. For whatever reason he may find in his mind, he will fall away. Not because he is afraid of the surface, but because he deeply senses within him a movement that perhaps he is not capable of understanding and certainly not capable of standing against in his deepest sense. In a true marriage, my friends, in a true relationship, both are aware of the need for understanding on the deepest levels their own part in this duality. There is within each of you the longing to be nurtured. The male nurtures the female, and the female in turn nurtures the male. It is thus all over you, around you, surrounding you. It is the rain, it is the wind, it is the cloud, it is the sun that nurtures the land. Each alone would be nothing. Each alone, what would be the interrelationship? And yet, if I might use an analogy, this fear is like a smog band that separates man from woman. Fear, my friends, only fear. The man says, what will I do? What will I do if I totally give myself to this woman in love? I will be nothing. And I say, good. So what? So what? You wish to be nothing. That is the wish, is it not? That the ego should so die? Is that not what we say is what you want? And yet you have the opportunity living in your very houses and you say, oh no, not that way. Give it to me another way. Oh no, not that way. And let's speak of the woman, because this is a tremendously simple problem. It is not one or the other. It is both. And when love is missing, it is missing in both. It is not possible, my friends, to have one loving person totally surrounding, loving, and upholding the other, and the other be not loving. Because I will tell you this, if someone is nurtured, let us speak of the woman. If she is capable of this deep nurturing, then along with this nurturing comes something very, very wonderful, which is harmlessness. There is within the deep nurturing quality of the feminine aspect total harmlessness, total acceptance of all of it. A totally accepting person doesn't say, I will only accept certain things and I reject others. It accepts all. My friends, that is a definition of human surrender. That is the definition of human surrender. To accept all things. All things. Equally. And the totally loving person, be he male or female, is the one who takes in to her being all of the plays, all of the energy movements that come into her life, into his life, and simply receive them, understanding, accepting, peaceful, calm, joyous, silent. And then out of the joy of having been given whatever it is, after all, it's only life. You call it anger, you call it hate, you call it resentment. It's only life in motion. And the truly receptive one knows this. And out of the joy of this essence of life, gives out again. And therefore receives again. And then the process goes patiently, quietly, dynamically on its way. In the ultimate sense, the highest marriages are those in which, at the end of the marriage, the male and the female have, in a sense, been able to exchange places in some way. That the strengths and the weaknesses of one have, do you understand? They've been exchanged now. And that quality of being able to receive, having been mirrored so beautifully, is now a part of the other person's life. And the woman, having nurtured and taken in, now sees that she too has this quality of creative action. And so they lose this sense of male-femaleness. They become what is, the fancy word is what, androgynous, whatever. Only meaning that within their being now, both allow each other to play out each of the roles. If the male wishes to appear feminine at some aspect, wonderful. If he is going to play the child now and she the mother, wonderful. If now he's the dynamic, pulsating lover, wonderful. You see, no rules. Your rules for your relationships of male-female are stifling you. And they are not allowing you to flow into this essence. And it is one of the reasons why I say, please break down your physical roles. Please, if you feel yourself afraid of something, let us say that in a sexual relationship, it is the rule that the male should always be the aggressor. All right? One of the things, and one of the simple ways to overcome these roles, is to switch your roles. To simply switch your role. The man cooks the dinner, the woman becomes aggressive in the sex act. the man takes care of the child, the woman goes out and does something outside. Do you see? Why? Why? Someone will say, well, that's just childish, that's contrived. And I say, your minds are childish, and your minds are contrived. How else are we going to begin to break it down unless we begin to break it down on the outside? Where? When you begin to break it down out there, then you don't become so afraid. You know, when you go ahead and cook a dinner as a man, and you don't feel any less, you don't feel any different, you know, you don't feel strange about it, you simply feel a part of it. This teaches you something. When you have the joy of moving into something that's a feminine area, and you're able to do it creatively, dynamically, and understand the wholeness of that act, then your fear gets lessened and lessened. And so it is with women. There is this great anathema to do those things that are masculine, for fear of becoming labeled a masculine woman, just as there is fear in the male to be labeled a feminine man. I would tell you this, that those that are closest to the harmony of the one are those that allow both to play freely, equally, and joyously through their being, without any question as to the rightness or wrongness. If you identify with your body, then you cannot escape identifying with your role as a man or as a woman. So, what then can we do about it? First, the difficult part. Going within your being and looking carefully, deeply, and wholly at those roles. Looking to see what it is that you hold as a belief about the female or the male, whichever is the opposite, and then looking very closely at what you see about your own sex, whether it be male or female. If you do this well, it will be obvious to you the areas of fear that keep you tightly encompassed within your own being. I can hear crying throughout the universe one cry, which is, allow me, allow me, allow me. I always say that my observation of the human condition is that you do not allow each other to be this moment spontaneously what you wish to be. For example, if part of your life is so constricted and controlled that you think that where things are placed in a room is very important, and your partner decides one day that he or she simply is going to ignore that, not make the beds, not do the dishes, not do whatever, just not do it. Just not do it. Because why? Because in this instant in time, this person does not wish to do it, period. Spontaneous choice to say, I'm walking out on this mess and I want to do something else and I'm not going to wait 1 hour, I'm going now. Spontaneously going now, out and do whatever it is I wish to do. Just sit maybe, or dig, or plant, or ride, or drive, whatever, just do. And you're left with this chaos. Watch carefully what you do, because it can be very interesting. If you choose to clean up the clutter, with what kind of an attitude is it done? Is it done with the feeling of, that person is irresponsible, that person should know that this shouldn't be done, that person should know that these things should be taken care of, after all there is an order to the universe and everything should be done according to this and that, so on and so on. Or else you can do it the other way. Well, how wonderfully self-righteous I am. I'm doing a job that somebody else should do. And all the time underneath, you are making a decision, which is that your way of doing things is better than the other person's way. My friends, you do it all the time. Women do it to men, and men do it to women. A man wants to go and simply go. He wants to one day say, well, goodbye. I'm leaving. I'll be back when? 5 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours? I don't know. I'm going. And he puts himself in his vehicle and he leaves. Maybe he will just go 2 miles down the road and sit Maybe he'll get out of his car and walk into the mountain. Maybe he'll go into town and have a friendship. Who knows? Who knows what he will do? And then what will the woman do? Well, if she's like most of the women I observe, she will become anxious. She will become worried. She will do the same thing. She will become fussy about things. She will start saying things like, he should be responsible. Do you understand the theme that keeps running through all of this? Your ideas of responsibility are that other people do those things that you have mentally contrived that each other do. And if you dare to not do them, if you dare to fall from that point, then the other person, instead of giving you the spontaneous right to change today and not be today like you were yesterday, they do everything they can to pull you back into line, and they call it being responsible. And everyone knows that you have to be responsible. My friends, you can be as responsible as you wish, but I will tell you this, it is not going to get you free. Because if you have such a desire to keep your life ordered, how are you going to let chaos reign? People come to me and they say, my marriage isn't going as well since I started listening to your tapes. Things aren't working so well. You know, things are beginning to fall apart. The glue is coming undone. Things are opening up and it's not working very well. I say, fine. Take yourself away, glue yourself back together. Fine, I have no complaints with that. I told you and I tell you again, if you wish everything to stay in its ordered road, then do not listen to me. Because that is not what I'm here for. You are already so stifled by the orders of your mentalized life that it is going to take an act of God, it seems to me, to burst you open. And this is why great upheavals in your own life, great upheavals in the earth plane, are those things that are going to bring you closest to seeing your own selves clearly. The ruts that you have buried yourselves in, my friends, that keep you so safe and secure, are filled with mud. And that is where you choose to stay. And stay if you will. And those of you who become angry at me because the listening to the tapes has brought yourself or your mates into some kind of confusion over your relationships, I say, then make a choice. Don't listen. Go back to where you were and live your life out. Or be daring. Be bold. Have the courage to look. Have the courage to see. If the glue is coming undone in your relationship, then it was not divine glue that was holding it together, and you might as well find it out now and begin to work on it. That would be my suggestion to those of you who find your marriages in difficulty because of things that have been said here. If you wish for me to feel sorry for you, I cannot. But I will tell you where my sorrow would come. And that is here. If, after seeing that the glue that held you together was contrived, control one over the other, my sorrow would be that you would just leave that and walk on to something else and try to stick it together with the same glue. Because, my friends, if you observe a relationship held together on false premise, then instead of throwing the relationship out the window and trying another one, it would seem to me that an obvious possibility is to together become alchemists in getting a divine glue that will keep you together as one unit of understanding that can serve as a divine PowerPoint to help others. Because, my friends, most relationships are held together with manipulative glue. But it is my constant knowledge that any two people whose hearts are really desirous of truly coming together in the deep sense of sharing their center source can do so, but it takes courage, and it takes dropping the lies and the illusions of what you think you had and facing what you have. It is no disgrace to go to the gods and say, we thought we had love, and it seems to us now that it is a pale replica because it isn't holding together. And ask the gods to help. And what do I mean by asking the gods to help? If there are any gods, my friends, they reside within each of you. And it is my absolute promise that anyone who has a sincere desire to touch upon the wisdom of the gods can do so in the silence of their own being. But they have to keep their mouths shut. There is more damage done through words than anything I see on the earth plane. All of you feel that the advent of worldwide communication is helping bring you together. That is not my observation. That is not my observation. My observation is all of this talk, that goes on chattering all over your globe is sending up such a roar that no one can understand it. And such it is between two people. Cosmic glue is available. But you cannot begin to glue something together until you are aware that it has fallen apart. And those of you who would like to pretend that your relationship is wonderful and harmonious and dynamic, some of you it might be. I have no question about that. But so many are held together by habit and by fear. It takes courage. It takes courage, my friends, to enter into the realization that what you have created between you is totally earthbound and contains nothing of the divine essence. So what is the beginning step? Facing deeply within yourself that the structure has fallen apart, or is in about to fall apart, or has fallen apart long ago and is simply being held together by habit patterns, resentments. If you are in a relationship and you hear yourself speaking negatively about the other person when that person isn't around, understand that the bonding compound is simply your own ego and has nothing to do with the divine. If, on the other hand, when the other person is gone and you have the opportunity of discussing them, you only bring forward all of those deep, nourishing virtues that you know exist in everyone, then understand that you are probably closer to having some kind of true bonding compound, at least in the wings, ready to be used. We began with a mother principle. It has been wrongly said that the mother principle embodies love. It is true that she embodies love. But there is no statement that can be made that it is only the mother principle that embodies love. The masculine-oriented person usually comes to love through meditation. Do you hear me? That through the meditative power of trying to find abstract truth, which is the masculine mentalization, concepts, the intellect, it bursts into awareness, and in that burst of awareness comes love as well as truth. The feminine aspect can make no sense of this questing for truth or freedom. What makes sense to the feminine aspect is love. And if you say to the femininely oriented person, if you meditate, you will feel the boundless love, then that person will rejoice at the opportunity to meditate, because that is what they wish to come in harmony with. And as they move through and become engulfed with love, what appears to them but truth? They are not found one without the other. You cannot find love without finding truth. You cannot find truth without finding love. It is simply that some people have one orientation and some people have others, and they are neither good nor bad, and they are up nor down, lesser nor greater. It is simply what is your inclination. But know well this, that the true harmonious pair understands each other's way, and if it is, let us take the prototype, which may not be the way it really is in your life, but let us say that the male is the one who seeks truth. Then the woman who truly wishes to support and nourish that keeps that time sacred and holy and protects, like the tigress, protects that time for that person so that they can have that. Do you understand? Contrives their life around and takes on extra duties if necessary in order to give that person the time necessary to find within them through the meditative process that which they seek. And will defend and keep people away, and the telephone and the children and the dogs and whatever is necessary, out. This is your father's time. This is my man's time, and let it be his. And freely his, not with this underhanded, well, I suppose I'd better let him do it. You see, because that kind of feeling permeates under the door and over the top and through the windows, and the person sitting there has this tremendously difficult force field to overcome. And then the opposite of the man who isn't able to give of his love, because it's not alive in him, it is dead, and yet he looks at his woman and he says, and he knows that she needs this nourishment. He knows that just as he needs his time of quietude, she needs this nourishment. And it may not be in his nature, but he calls upon all of the sources within him to try and present to her this, that she needs to nourish her being so that you can provide the rain that will bring the seeds of love into fruition within her. Do you understand me? It's got to be both ways. And it isn't natural for either of you at the start. I do not deny that. But it must be so. And so then the man who is the intellect, who is the dry person, who can find this shower of life through meditation, must be able to go within and do his best to bestow this water upon his beloved so that she can begin to grow. Because you see, there is one fact. A plant grows much faster in a protected environment. And the man who knows this knows that the woman seeks to love, but is afraid to love, is afraid to be vulnerable, is afraid that if she bestows this love unconditionally, that the man will trample upon it and walk out the door. It takes great courage to love, my friend. It takes great discipline to meditate, and it takes great courage to love. Both qualities. In some, the discipline comes easier. In others, the love comes easier. The courage. So I would ask that you give deep thought to these things, that the nurturing of the environment, why is it, my friends, that women, when they come to me, most of them, their primary concern is with love? Is it because they are lower than the male? I don't think so. I think it is because in many women, they sense deeply that their way to freedom comes through love. And why is it that you find men coming and asking for tools for meditation? Why is it? Because they sense deeply that their way is through the discipline of a meditative process. And so it is. And therefore I give varying tools, excuse me, varying tools for varying people. I repeat again, it is not true to say that all men are meditators and all women are lovers. It is absolutely untrue. To say that kind of statement is to mean that you have absolutely no conception of the duality of everyone's nature. Some women are so soppy and so emotional and so drawn by the wisps and winds of their emotional field that what is absolutely required for them is a strict discipline of meditation to at least bring them to center. Some men are so readily able to meditate that their hearts are so cold and frozen that what is necessary for them is something quite different. Each person has a different, totally different need. Now, does this mean that everyone listening to this tape should rush here to this vast, empty land and ask me what they need? Oh, no. Don't hand me your power, my friend. You need your power. And you know which of these you are and where you fall. Anyone listening knows what they need. Everyone listening knows, if they will take the time, what pulls them. Because you see, it isn't an either-or situation. Those of you who are in relationships with the opposite sex, you have the opportunity to do both. You can have your time of meditation, and if your wife is so inclined, then meditate together. A very great bonding takes place between people when they meditate together. A great bonding. Those of you who are married to women who are in relationship with women who you know need to have the reins, the soft rain of love poured down upon them so that they can begin to grow and be nurtured and feel strong, then you have the chance to participate in the loving aspect. Both are available. And in truth, my friends, both are available to you whether you are in a relationship with another person or not. Because as you move through your life, unless you happen to be a hermit, and if you were a hermit, you probably don't have electricity, so you're probably not hearing me anyway. Unless you are a hermit, daily you come in contact with people, every day, over and over and over again. Find out your own way. If you find yourself a blend of both, which many of you will, then I suggest that you do both. Have your time of deep meditation, and have your time of giving out of the life-giving waters of true appreciation, praise, compassion, understanding, support for the other, so that their environment will become a nurturing place. Believe me, my friends, none of you have to hurt each other. Life presents enough pain and suffering without any of you contriving an environment to teach someone else. Please, never. You know, some of you listening to this tape, conceive of yourselves as capable of contriving environments to teach other people lessons. That isn't your business. That's God's business. The divine will make sure that people are in the right place at the right time. Again, we must state, those of you who listen to this tape and think you are so loving, and you find that there are not people around you who adore you, who love you, who are compassionate toward you, who do not share this, then you must ask yourself, am I living in an illusion? Is my love illusory? Those of you who see yourself as firm and true and near to the truth and do not have other people surrounding you asking you for your truth, then you must ask yourself this question. Do I really have anything? Or is it just an idea in my mind? And if people ask you, and if nothing takes place to change them, if nothing dynamic and exciting takes place, then perhaps you're not giving them truth at all. Perhaps you're just giving them empty mental ideas. And if you think you're giving love, but in return you don't have a love response from other people towards you, then perhaps what you're giving is not love at all. There is no mystery, my friend. Look at your life. As you give, so do you receive. But it takes honesty. Those of you who are teachers, look carefully. Are you nurturing? Is there new growth, or is it just the old, old, old things over and over again? What is really happening? Just as relationships are stuck together with the glue of old habits and fears, so are spiritual groups hung together and stay together through fears. basically, and I know I stand on very dangerous ground here, I do not approve of groups. And I will tell you why. This is why I would never like to see what is called a group take form on this land. And let me explain. A group has, no matter how sketchily put forward, a definition of what they believe to be closer to truth or closer to love. And if one of those members spontaneously explodes into an area that is different from the given, they have two choices. They can either leave, thereby taking new dynamic change out of the situation, which is a great shame, or they will suppress this because they feel that it can't be right, because it doesn't add up to the conglomerate idea. And that is also a great shame. I should use the word a great waste.
You said the same thing about most teachers.
Yes.
That when a student starts to experience a spontaneous development that is not exactly what the teacher experienced, you get into a similar problem.
Exactly, and then the student has two problems. Either they can leave the teacher and all of the heartbreak that necessitates and the feelings of guilt and so forth, or they can stay and repress it. So this is why I feel groups are not the answer. This is not to say that I don't think that getting together and meditating together isn't tremendous help. No, of course I don't mean that. I think that the more of you that meditate together, the more power you will have to share with each other, the better, the more dynamic your meditation is. If for no other reason, your ego will keep you awake. If nothing else, your ego will keep you awake, because you don't want to fall asleep in front of all these people and look the fool. So since you have the ego, you might as well use it to your advantage. Make some use of this encumbrance that is hanging around you. But groups decide their value as a group. Are they better than others? Are they less than others? It falls into traps that I find boring, undynamic. A loosely knit bunch of people who come together and who state what they feel and who share what they have experienced and who allow the breeze of differences to blow freely, truly, and creatively between them. This is the kind of work that I feel is needed upon the earth plane. You don't need any more groups, my friends. What you need are dynamic individuals, courageous enough to test their own experience. To test it. You have your ideas all made up. Someone comes on the land and says, "You're full of hot air." That's not true at all. Let me share with you what I have had. Comes the disclosure of what they have experienced. Now, two ways to respond. The normal human way, tighten up your chest, close off your mind, defend yourself as well as the knights of old, put the armor down, and just sit there within there and not hear a thing. No new life coming. But there's another point of view. Open it all out. Embrace it. Take what is true and nourishing and real and dynamic of what they're saying. I don't mean that you flop from one idea to another day after day. I simply say everything, everyone who comes is a unique entity with a unique experience, and some of that experience could be extremely helpful. If you have your mind made up, nothing will help you. If you have your mind is as open as the air and you don't know, and you know that you don't know, which is the proper attitude of every seeker, that you don't know, and you're constantly waiting for the divine to teach you, then you keep yourself open. And everything that comes your way, the heart opens, the gates are open, the mind is open, everything is in a state of openness, and you wait, and you encompass, and you receive, and you take in, and you become nourished. That's a different view. Choose which one you will. But the defended person is the dead person. Because if you are defended in any way against love, against differing opinions, against people, against events, you're dead. How can you live? There's no juice of life running through you. You're defended. You cannot allow. You become afraid. It is very easy to live open if you assume one thing. And I would ask you all to assume one thing. Nothing in God's createdness can hurt you. Nothing in God's createdness can hurt you. Everything is energy in motion and can nourish as easily as anything else. It is your mind that tells you those things that can nourish and those things that cannot. Someone can say to you, I hate you, and in the power of their caring for you can nurture you. Someone else can say, I love you, and in the emptiness of their caring for you can dry you out. The words make no difference at all. Some of the greatest lovers in the world can't say a word about love. And some of the worst lovers in the world talk a lot about it. You can tell when you're in the presence of someone who loves and someone who doesn't love. You know when you're in the presence of someone who is open and excited and who is anxious and happy to be with you and who wants to participate as part of the oneness with you, another part of the oneness, and to share and to be and to experience this moment, this cosmically marvelous moment. You can tell the difference. The kind of a life that you can live open, free, totally allowing can only come about if you begin to test out one statement which I make, which is nothing in the createdness can hurt you. You say to me, what if I die? I can be killed. I say, so what? You can't be killed. Your body can be killed. I don't doubt that for a moment. And if that is your great concern, then you will be defended. If you are trying to keep your body alive and not allow this thing to happen to it and that thing to happen to it and so on, then you are defended. And this is why, at the basis of it, you must eventually look at your own death. This is why we go back to other tapes that we have done, which is that this is a primary focus around which you must look. How afraid of death are you? Because death comes about when you love. I repeat, death comes about when you love. And this is why so few people want to love. Because well they know that when love overtakes them, their illusory ego self will die. It is the ultimate fear, and it is the ultimate glory, and you must make your choice to be as vulnerable as the small plant upon the vast plain, trusting the process. So it dies. What happens to the plant when it dies? It becomes transformed alchemically into another substance that then goes in and nurtures another birth, another life, a totally different movement. What do you care? What do you care if you are this body or that body or no body at all? What do you care? What are you so afraid of? Can words destroy you? Oh, no. Can beatings about the face destroy you? Oh, no. Can death destroy you? Oh, no. What is there to fear? But you don't love because you're afraid. You're afraid of being hurt. You're afraid of dying. You're afraid that you will be no more. And my friends, all of that is true. The you that you perceive will be no more. It will be no more. So I ask you to give deep consideration to these things. Questions?
If we succeed in becoming nobody, then we have attained a state where we are nobody, or we do not have to take a body.
If you can achieve a state where you are totally vulnerable to all that moves, which is what a free person is. A free person is one who cares not what happens, truly not. You know, be it good or bad. It isn't some kind of a mental rationalization of so what. you know, in a kind of a defended way about the victim, but the wonder of soul, what? Meaning the wondrous uprising of I don't really care. I mean, really not caring doesn't mean that you are unresponsive in each moment of, well, this or that, I don't mind. I mean, many people fall into a false trap here about, well, they don't care this or that. And they take it on as kind of a affected facade of not caring. But nobody is really taken in by that who's paying attention. You know, if you say, somebody asks you what you want to eat and you say you don't care and you really have a preference, it is much kinder to say, I prefer this. It's much kinder. It just takes the burden off of the other person. And but people like to allow to see themselves as totally not caring. And if they really don't care, that's wonderful. You know, but that's a rare state. Usually people have a preference. But the trap that one falls into is saying, well, you don't care if A happens or if B happens. Now, how do you feel about that? By that I mean, if you say that A and B both contain the very same quality, the very same wonder, the very same aliveness, and you finally get yourself into knowing that aliveness, then you can get to the place where you really don't care. But prior to seeing that everything that comes at you, everything, has the same life in it, prior to that, you make selections. And don't fool yourself. I do not at all disapprove of the person who is attempting to reach that point by saying to themselves, I don't care, and allowing this or that. But please don't delude yourself. Do you know what I'm saying? There's a point at which you try to affect this on the outside because you realize this is what you would like, and it's an affectation. And that's fine. Allow yourself that, but be aware of it. And don't care. In fact, I think a very good thing to help you along in all of these things is the facing up of your weaknesses and then doing this. Let us say that you know yourself to be someone who doesn't like to rise in the morning for meditation or does and falls asleep or whatever. Now, if you carry that idea of yourself around daily, then each morning when you sit to meditate, this is the first thought that comes to your mind. This is the kind of meditator I am. Therefore, this is what's going to happen to me. And lo and behold, except for a rare time, it happens to you. So then what is the answer? The answer is to rise above it by simply putting yourself in such a situation that you're totally awake before you sit down to meditate. Then you won't fall asleep. You know, one who rises up out of bed and just sits up and just tries to meditate, the sleep energies are still very much awash within them. Do you understand? The sleepiness is still there. So take action. If you care about your meditation, take action. Jump in the shower. Pour the cold water. Won't that do it? That'll get things going. Get up, get moving. Don't just get up out of bed and lethargically sit there and just hope that somehow the divine is going to goose you along. That isn't the job of the divine. That's your job. Get in the shower, pour on the water, drink milk, drink whatever. No, don't drink milk. Actually, I take that back. Do not drink milk. It does not help you in your meditations. All right. Whatever you choose to do, aliven yourself. Get yourself awake. If you're serious about meditation and you find that it's not working, look at your life, figure out why, and take actions against it. Do you understand? If you're one of those who just can't get up, then make yourself get up earlier. Make yourself do it. Push against it. If somebody says, well, I can't do this, I just can't do this, I'm just not capable of being organized, then instead of just allowing yourself to continue this false idea, take some action against that idea, which is false. It doesn't matter if you're organized or not. But this is where we go back to looking at your priorities. If you find that you consider yourself to be a lazy person, let us say, and this follows and ruins your meditation. Or another common thing I see on Earth Brain, I'm not capable of sustaining my moment-to-moment awareness. I hear this a lot. I can't do it. I just can't do it. Well, if that is really what you are saying, then it's true that you can't, and you continue not to be able to. So assault it by simply saying, all right, that's a burden. I don't feel that that's the best for me. And so put your awareness on it. Take it seriously. Find out, is it true? Is it true that you're a lazy person? Is it true that you just slop through your days, or is it not? The fact is, the closer you look at yourself, the closer you're going to come to the realization that you are empty, that you are an empty vessel that things move through. Now, those things that you keep identifying with come through more often than the ones that you don't. But the fact is, if you see yourself closely, you are empty. And everything moves within that emptiness. And you choose to identify how you project yourself. I'm lazy. I'm not lazy. I'm industrious. I'm neat. I'm loving. I'm intellectual. I'm smart. I am dumb. I am capable. I am not. Whatever, whatever. I am beautiful. I am ugly. I am fat. I am skinny. I am healthy. I am sick. Whatever. All right? Those are all ideas awash in an emptiness. So what are you going to fill it with? What emptiness-filling thoughts are you going to use? Pick. You're not, you know, it isn't something, you know, this thing you call the personality. Oh, my God. How I wish I could show you what the personality is, because then you would see what it is not. You take it to be something so substantial. And that person is stuck in that personality. You know that person is incapable. That person does this and this and this. And my goodness, everybody knows what that person does. Nonsense. People tell you those things enough, you begin to believe it. But the fact is, your emptiness. Every one of you listening to this tape is empty. Empty, empty, empty. Things wash through you. You say, oh, that's me. You hang on. And you act out of that. Other things wash through you, you don't identify with those, so you let them go. But they're all awash in you. I've told you this again and again. You're all just empty with all these things awash in you. So choose. Now, those who are real seekers will choose the emptiness. And it will just be the observer of the passing movements. But not all are capable of that. All are not capable of that at this moment. Therefore, to those of you that are not capable of the fear of the emptiness, I would say, do not allow yourself to be kept from freedom by continually identifying with your weaknesses. Use your strengths so that you can someday be strong enough to let the strengths go. But the human condition is that you dwell on the negative aspects of your beings and of those of others. So if you are not one of those who feels that you want to vast to observe the emptiness, then at least do this for yourselves and in the treatment of others. Concentrate on, activate, and keep ever present your positive virtues, which will then at least give you enough courage to begin to live a dynamic life. It takes courage to be empty and to see it. The emptiness is always there, but the courage to view that emptiness, that is something else. I suspicion I've gone on long enough. Are there any eminent questions that you think might be asked that I have missed?
I don't have any.
Thank you.
Thank you for telling me.